smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
It's often the case that people who are really involved with dogs are involved in more than one way, right? They may be a behaviorist or a trainer on the one hand, but as well, they perhaps are involved with therapy dogs or rescue dogs. Beverly Ulbrich, who is the president and founder of the Pooch Coach, based in San Francisco, is one such person. Her resume is about 12 pages long, right? She is on the board of Rocket Dog Rescue Group, as well Share Pet, which is a therapy dog group. She's involved with Pets Are Wonderful Support, and we'll mention something about that later, but then do a whole episode of the Good Dog Podcast on that. And as well as involved with Vet SOS, which helps the homeless people in San Francisco who have pets deal with them and make sure that they're getting the proper care and training. So, Beverly, first of all, thank you on behalf of dogs and their dog owners everywhere for all of this work you do. And secondly, welcome to the Good Dog Podcast.
Thank you.
Today we're going to be focusing in particular on how to help working folks who want to have dogs. I think it's probably fairly new that a person who admits to working 40 hours a week is actually going to have a hard time adopting or purchasing a dog from a breeder. Is that fairly new?
Yeah, and add in rescue groups.
Oh, absolutely. When I said adopting, that's what I was talking about.
But I'm saying rescue groups and breeders are now focusing in on that and have, you know, whatever, anywhere from 1 to 5 page questionnaires asking people, you know, basically to make sure they are going to be a good dog owner and a responsible dog owner. And one of the things that people are finding out is that if they admit to working full-time, a lot of the places say that they're not fit for owning a dog then.
In fact, is it your feeling that people who work full-time are not fit to own a dog?
No. In fact, hopefully, because they're making money, they can afford to own a dog. So it's actually a good thing.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a very tricky situation because there are, and I have a tremendous number of listeners who work full-time. I mean, it's very difficult to survive in this society if you don't. And yet, I don't see how that's mutually exclusive to being a responsible pet owner on any level.
Right. As long as you are, you know, doing things to keep your dog fit and happy so they're not getting into trouble or in any danger when they're home alone for a long time.
Right. So let's talk about that. First of all, let's talk about puppies. That's often how the life of a dog begins, in the home. And so people who do work and are gone for some chunk of time during the day, and I want to add also that many people choose to go home at lunch hour and spend some time with their dogs, let them out, walk them, play with them, that sort of thing. But if people are going to be gone for long periods of time and have a puppy, what do you recommend? There's a lot of talk about crating versus some sort of crate and exercise pen combination.
Right. Well, first and foremost, I have to say this. The biggest mistake people make when they get any dog at first is they spend an astronomical amount of time with the dog. So in other words, basically 24/7, they're playing, entertaining, you know, amusing the dog. And then they suddenly go, oh, back to real life, I have to go to work, and they leave the dog home alone. And they wonder why the dog freaks out. So what I always tell people, the very first thing they have to do is train the dog to be alone. So first and foremost, as soon as you have the dog, make sure you do whatever you're going, whatever structure you're going to have in place for when you're not there, start introducing them to it right away. You know, get them in their crate, get them in their pen, put them in a, you know, different section of the house, whatever you're going to end up doing when you're not there. You just want to get them used to you leaving and coming back in the early days when you first have them, so they think of it as part of their life with you, as opposed to assuming that you're always going to be there and then suddenly you're gone and they panic.
That makes a lot of sense. True for kids as well, right? Got to get
exactly.
them used to a babysitter.
That's exactly what I use. I say, if you never left your kid with a babysitter and now at 10 or 11 you're finally leaving it with a babysitter, they most likely will freak out. But if you've been doing it ever since they were 2 or 3, it's part of their life. It's no big deal. In fact, it's kind of fun to play with the babysitter and stay up a little later and, you know, all the kind of great things that you get. So
I would
so
even take it one step beyond that and say that all creatures need to know how to soothe themselves.
Yep.
And so even if you're not hiring a babysitter for your child, but allowing your baby to spend some time alone in the crib, soothing himself or herself. It's the same with dogs. They need to know how to entertain themselves and soothe themselves into a comfort state.
And relax. Just plain relax and have their quiet time and alone time.
Absolutely. Do you advocate crate training and crating puppies?
Yes, especially with puppies. You have to keep themselves out of, protect them from themselves. Because when they're puppies, they're going to eat things they shouldn't. And if you're not there to watch them, you don't know, you know, it's really hard to puppy-proof your house because they can literally chew on, you know, wood furniture and other things that you wouldn't even think of and get sick. So let alone they can go to the bathroom everywhere. So you're much better off containing them in some way, either with a crate or with what you described, a puppy pen kind of situation where there's a crate, a wee-wee pad of some sort or paper somewhere, and then, you know, dish of water. So they can make their way around their little area, have some toys to play with and the like, and then start getting used to, oh, I use the paper when I have to go to the bathroom, and otherwise I can go lay in my crate if I want to sleep. And they have a little control over their environment, but it's still in a very small area where accidents aren't going to occur.
Do you have a rule of thumb for how long is an appropriate length of time to keep a puppy, or for that matter, a dog, in a crate?
The rule of thumb I like is usually 1 hour for every month the dog is old, is usually what the guideline is.
So what do you do with a puppy? Say, for instance, you get a puppy at 8 or 12 weeks old, and, you know, maybe you time it such that you're on vacation that first week or whatever, but then you have to go back to work. What do you do?
Right. So then again, it's much better not to crate them, because the whole idea behind crate training is to tell the dog, don't go to the bathroom here when I'm not here. And if you put them in a crate and they're there for 8 hours, they're going to have to pee or poo. And then they're going to start messing in their crate, and then you've kind of ruined the whole premise of crate training for potty training. So you're better off, if you're going to leave them for any length of time that they can't hold their bladder, you're better off having the pen set up we described, so they have a place that they can go and relieve themselves if you're going to leave them a long amount of time. Most importantly, though, as you can imagine, is making sure they're fed and then exercised afterwards and have a chance to go to the bathroom before you leave them alone and have a chance to get tired out and you know, get some stimulation and things under their belt before the day begins, so they're not, quote-unquote, looking for trouble after you leave.
If people can afford it, do you advocate some sort of doggy daycare or play group or hiring someone to come in and spend a little time with their dog during the day, or is that overkill?
No, I think it's great. It's great for socialization, to get them used to having somebody else watch them, for instance. Having a dog walker is great because it means that if someday, you know, when you want to go on vacation and can't take your dog, the dog's used to, you know, being watched by someone else, walked by someone else, handled by someone else. You'd be surprised how many dogs just don't accept strangers into the home, even, let alone strangers handling them, because they're so isolated. So keeping them out in the public eye, so to speak, by having different people picking them up, walking them, dropping them off at doggy daycare are all great ways to keep the dog socialized as well as entertained.
Have we gone overboard, though, with the whole basic notion of doggy daycare? For instance, I can understand it with puppies, or if you're really going to be gone for long periods of time. But has there been just a pendulum swinging too far in the other direction of people feeling that their dogs can't be alone for some number of hours and have to be entertained externally like this?
I'm sure there is. We're a nation of, you know, excess and spoiling and all that. So I'm sure there's many people, myself included. Every time I leave my dog, I still feel some kind of guilt inside. I can't get, you know, no matter what, no matter how much I know she's happy and, you know, it's safe and everything, I still, you know, always feel bad because, you know, we're parents, basically, and you're always worried about your children. But on the other hand, the excess to me is more of the crazy stuff like that. They think they have to send their dog to kind of camp, you know, with the pools and the you know, massage rooms and toenail paintings and pedicures and things that I see sometimes. That's where I'm thinking, okay, that's just excessive spending, you know. although, I mean, it is great if your dog especially is going to be locked up for a whole week, let's say, at some place, to have swimming and other places there is especially good then.
Hey, listen, I'd love it, too, if someone wants to send me to a spa for a week. That would be just fine. But, listen, that's a case of maybe you have just too much money.
Exactly. Exactly.
This has got to be someplace
and,
else
and
to
you
go.
Are saying that this is my child and I'm sending them to camp.
Right, right. But I suppose it is important to point out that you'd probably rather people focus too much on their dogs than not enough on their dogs.
Exactly. As well as long as, again, for instance, my thing I keep telling people is you can spoil your dog. My dog's spoiled, but it doesn't mean that she's ill-mannered. Or has any behavioral problems. Just like with kids, there's kids that have everything, you know, that they could ever want in life in terms of, you know, being born with a silver spoon in their mouth. It doesn't mean they have to be spoiled brats, right? They can still be polite. They can still be good members of society. They can still be helpful and kind and thoughtful.
Hey, they can even have a work ethic.
Exactly. They can even work. And so to me, like, for instance, my dog might be spoiled in terms of the number of toys and beds and attention she gets, but she works for every little thing she does. She's always got to, you know, kind of perform, if you will, and be on guard, but she loves it. You know, that's part of what dogs want to do. They want to work for you. They want to be engaged. They want to be asked to do things, and that's what we do. So I keep her busy, and she's a very polite and well-mannered dog, even though she, you know, is more well-treated than your average probably American child at this point in terms of the amount of, you know, treats and food and games and things that she has.
What about treats? I know that some experts recommend just using a piece of regular dog food and not get carried away with high-calorie treats that, you know, aren't as nutritious. What do you believe in that?
I think treats are a great way to break up the monotony, even to just sprinkle on some kibble, for instance, to make their food a little different every night. I think stuff like that is not going too far. I think the thing is, again, is just to make sure, just like with your kids, are you going to buy them, you know, potato chips and ice cream and all that as their snack food, or are you going to give them some fruits and vegetables, right? And it's the same thing with the dogs. Dogs will eat fruits and vegetables, and they will also eat very high, you know, high-end snacks that are basically human-grade ingredients or even, I mean, I feed my dog things that are higher quality than I buy for myself. I mean, there are people now making dog treats with, you know, beef that has, you know, no hormones, no antibiotics, you know, grass-fed, the best in the world. And I actually get that from my dog because my last dog died of cancer, and I'm just not taking that chance anymore. So I'm going to make sure I put good stuff in my dog's food and keep her as healthy as I can. And all those things exist now, so it's pretty easy to keep your dog healthy.
Beverly, in searching around on your Pooch Coach website, I found that you focus on exercise, discipline, and affection. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that's actually something from Cesar Millan's methodology that I did pick up in studying with him a little bit as well. And I really do believe that Americans, again, we think affection. And as I tell people that get even foster dogs in the house, if you had to choose between either just loving on the dog and kissing them and hugging them versus telling them what to do and leading them and guiding them and just training them right away, you're better off training them without any hugs and kisses than just giving hugs and kisses, because that's what the dog wants. In the wild, they get told what to do all the time. They have an alpha dog telling them what to do. They're not just getting affection constantly. And so if we're not giving them that leadership and making them, you know, basically disciplined, like I said, polite, well-mannered beings, and then making sure they're exercised and stimulated, both physically and mentally, then we're going to have some behavior problems. And then if you just give affection, just like with a child, they're not going to learn how to really function in society, and they're going to have some really bad problems, either, you know, aggression or separation anxiety or other things. Even I've seen a lot of dogs that have been diagnosed with OCD. OCD, a lot, they'll get stuff on, I've seen dogs get obsessed with shadows, with lights, things like that. Almost all the human disorders at this point can be found in dogs.
I was going to ask about an ADD dog, but I'm glad you clarified that.
Yeah, I mean, well, I always joke that puppies are ADD. That's probably the way to look at it. But there are. I mean, again, it almost is ADD, but it's only in the sense that they haven't learned to calm down and pay attention. A lot of dogs that have, you know, been in shelters and things, the overstimulation of that environment causes them to kind of shut down and just not be able to focus at all. So when you get them out of that environment, they can be literally, like, seem like an ADD kind of thing, where it's like they can't focus for more than 1 second on any task. And so you kind of have to build up their stamina again in terms of working with them and getting them back on track and being able to sit calmly and listen and pay attention.
I always like to throw in a real-world example, and as long as I've got you on the phone, let me ask you about this one. Lulu, my soon-to-be 3-year-old peek-a-poo, has the benefit of both of her parents working from home, so we're around all the time. And recently, she didn't always do this, but recently she has taken to, when we do leave, running around the house and knocking over wastebaskets. She doesn't do much other damage, but she just literally knocks down wastebaskets all over the house. What's up with that?
That's just boredom, looking for something to do. I would say that the things that would, what I had to do, I even had a dog that did that a little bit, was more looking for things in the wastebaskets, though.
I'm sure she's looking. It's just she's not finding anything
exactly.
Too exciting.
Exactly. Again, the main thing is exercising the dog, tiring them out. You can also train them to stay off of wastebaskets. And there's lots of different ways to do that. When you have a dog that's doing things like that, you can do things to dissuade them, such as putting a can of pennies in the wastebasket. So when they knock it over, it just makes a really loud crashing sound, and then nothing else is in there that's fun. And so they go, wow, that really stunk. And if they keep knocking it over and keep getting loud crashes of pennies and no fun tissues to rip up or anything to eat, they're going to finally go, I guess I'll just stop doing this. It's boring and it's not really getting me anywhere. The problem is that if a dog, for instance, I do the same thing with counter surfing. If a dog learns, for instance, they get up on the counter one time and pull off a roast, it's going to be a lot harder to train them not to do it anymore than if the very first time they jumped up, they pulled off a can of pennies, right? Then they're going to say, well, that wasn't fun. And then they'll try it one more time and pull off another can of pennies and get yelled at again. And then they're going to finally say, I'm done with this. And
I am going to try that. There's no question that I'm going to try that.
Yep.
Let me ask you one other one. What about a dog that takes the edge of the toilet paper roll and just starts unraveling it? Also fun, right?
Exactly. Couple things. I have a command I teach that is off, that I teach a dog permanently to stay off of things. And as you can imagine, with puppies, it's great. You train them to stay off electrical cords and the like by just working with them. And there's a whole routine I do to train them the command. So first and foremost, I would try to get a command like that to teach your dog. The other thing, again, always fall back to making it a bad experience. What you can do with the toilet paper is, first of all, make it roll away that's harder for them to pull, over versus under. And then the other thing you could do is on the edge of the toilet paper, at least for, it won't last too long, but you could use bitter apple or even Tabasco sauce, or now there's even bitter apple paste that'll stay a little longer, and put it on the sheet that's hanging. When the dog goes to grab it, they'll go, tastes really nasty, and then they'll stop grabbing it.
That's a good one, because so often dogs will wait until you're not there to do these sorts of things, which makes it really difficult to give them those off commands. I mean, for instance, I've never seen Lulu knock a wastebasket over, but clearly when I'm not here, that's what she wants to do.
Right. And so what I do is I tell people, bring the wastebaskets, bring the toilet paper into the living room and just make them stay off of it for a night and show them if they go near it, you're really unpleased with them until they finally realize, wow, mommy doesn't want me to go anywhere near that. So then when you're not around, they're going to go there and go, wait, nope, I remember, mommy doesn't want me there, and they'll stay away from it.
But if you try to yell at them after the fact, when I walk into my room and I see the contents of my wastebasket all over the floor and I look at her and I let her know that I'm not happy with her, she has no idea what I'm talking about, right?
Typically, no. It depends. I mean, I have seen a lot of people will argue that the dog has no idea and they're just picking up your vibe that you're upset, so they're looking guilty based on your energy and that's it. But I've also seen dogs, like for instance, I had a dog that literally would follow me from room to room until I went into the room where he did something bad and he would hold back. That makes it pretty dang obvious that he knew which room he should not follow me in, because he knew he did something bad in that room.
There's no question that intelligence is not equivalent across the board in dogs or any other creature, right?
Exactly. But one thing to keep in mind, I always point out, is dogs mentally are about 4 or 5 years old in terms of humans. So if a 4 or 5 year old can understand the concept, usually a dog can.
And is that a dog of any age?
Yes, pretty much. Well, I mean, not baby puppies, but you know, as soon as that's how puppies start learning, that's about the level of logic they can use. So for instance, the mistake people make is they act like dogs are two year olds, and I always tell people, you know, with a 2 year old, you got to move things out of the way. You got to take the sharp object to the crystal vase and just move it, because the baby's going to keep reaching for it and you can't teach them no. But once they're 4 or 5, you can say, if you touch that again, you're going to your room. That's not yours. And they understand the concept. If it's not being theirs, they're not supposed to touch it. Same thing with dogs. Make them understand the concept that they're not supposed to touch your food and teach them that from early on rather than moving everything every time they go near it, because then they're just going to continue to remain the scavengers that they are. If it's available, I'm going for it, because, you know, if you left it out, it obviously is fair game.
Can most people train their own dogs, Beverly, or would you say that for the majority of dog owners, it's helpful to have either a class or some one-on-one training?
B. I think very rarely, or not, because it's just that there's so many little nuances with each and every dog, that things that can go wrong, and people have other full-time jobs and expertises and things they're focusing on, and they're not going to know every single thing they should do with the dog like an expert's going to. So I think at least getting a class under your belt, reading some good books and things will help too. But again, most of my clients have read, you know, tons of dog books, and they come to me massively confused because they conflict with each other so much.
How can you help people to find a good dog trainer in their particular city?
I mostly tell people there's a bunch of good websites. I like dogpro.org. Is a really good site that I'm affiliated with. There's also Association of Pet Dog Trainers. Those are associations that at least require people to have minimum years of service. You have to send in, you know, a questionnaire, send in references and the like, so they do check you out a bit. And then on top of it, of course, going to the person's website, reading about their style. And then the most important thing with anybody you're ever going to work with is just the face-to-face meeting. Until you meet and see whether there's a connection, the energy is feels right, it feels good to you that you want to work with this person, you're not going to know.
Excellent. In the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area, Beverly Ulbrich can be seen on KRON-TV. She's also been on MythBusters and on Animal Planet. And if people want more information about your services or any, you know, books that you might write in the future, what's your website, Beverly?
Poochcoach.com.
All right. Thanks so much for being on the Good Dog Podcast today.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode with the Pooch Coach. Beverly Ulbrich's site is poochcoach.com. If you like Good Dog, please consider subscribing to some of our other podcasts. There's Golf Smarter and our newest edition, the Affordable Housing Podcast. As always, please keep those emails coming. Write to gooddog@smarterpodcast.com.